You know, I will say, when I've been in the cafeteria observing, there are a lot less juice and water glasses on the tables. So something is getting through. Whenever I go to Anchorage, we have a rescue mission where people are kind of down and out. You know, they have drinking problems and drug problems and stuff, and things aren't quite working right up here. So they go to the rescue mission to have a free place to stay for a while. Well, the director of this rescue mission in Anchorage is a former Adventist, and he just loves my presentations. So every time I'm in town, he says, come on, Paul, get down here. We got a new set of guys, because you can only stay there a maximum, I think, of 90 days or something, and then you have to move out. But unless you're in the training program. But first time I started teaching there, he said, boy, he says, you got our cook in a big mess. And I said, why is that? And he says, well, all those cakes and stuff that they get donated, nobody's eating them, and they have to throw them out. And the milk is spoiling because they won't drink the milk. And so he says, even though these guys are not all together, you know, they're not the sharpest tool in the drawer, they get it. They get it. When they hear the presentation, they said, all right, we're done. And so he said, the cook says, find out more of his lecture so I can get ready what to make. Because even these guys who are down and out are saying, you know, I need to do something for myself. And so they quit eating the desserts. They weren't eating any more desserts because it's all donated stuff, you know, from the bakeries and stuff when it doesn't sell. And it's pretty bad. And so, yeah, he's having to really order lots more salads. And he's having to make the salad dressing from scratch. By the way, I have 6 pages of recipes. One of those devices wasn't working where I live, and so I couldn't send them ahead of time, so they couldn't copy them. So we'll see if we can get them copied while I'm here. It would be nice, but that's the way technology works sometimes. The scanner didn't work at the house. They had to order a new scanner, so I wasn't able to send them because the scanner didn't work. All right, we're going to talk about exercise, and then we're going to start to go into nutrition. Now, the most delicate area is the nutrition. There's two places people don't like to be bothered. One is right here in the wallet, and the other is right here in the taste buds. So I know I'm walking on very delicate ground here. Remember, I don't know what's in your refrigerator, okay? So I'm not here to pick on anybody or embarrass anybody because I don't know what you're eating. And actually, I'm not interested in what's in your refrigerator right now. I'm more interested in what's going to be in your refrigerator next week and next month and the month after that and month after that. And guess what? So is God. God is much more interesting to see some changes because we all can improve. We all can make changes. Remember, I'm telling you this because I love you. The easy thing would be just to do myself and I can eat, drink, and be merry. But God has put a burden on my heart that I need to share this with other people because it's been such a blessing for me. I want to share that with others. And I want them to benefit and see what it's like to step out and really enjoy more of God's benefits. Again, to be healthy, happy, and holy for heaven. All right. We're going to start by talking about exercise. Now, if you haven't exercised for several months or a year, don't expect to be Tarzan by the end of the month, all right? You took time to get out of shape. The body follows the laws of God, and it's going to take time to get back into shape. So don't try to do something all at once real fast. Gradual is the key word with exercise. Start out slow. Start out easy. You know, you don't have to do the 25 push-ups. Just start with 5, you know? You don't have to curl the 100-pound barbell. Start out with 20. Okay, you don't have to run for 2.5 hours. Just start out brisk walking if you want. Actually, do you know what exercise Ellen White says is the best? No, tricked you, didn't I? Gardening. Gardening is the best exercise, she says. And there's a good reason. You're pulling everything of your body. You're kneeling, you're bending, you're pushing, and you got something to eat afterwards, don't you? Yeah, and to share with others. So she says gardening is the best. And then after that, of course, is walking. And you just have to make sure you're walking correctly. I see too many people walking like jellyfish. You know, they're like this. All right? When you walk, that head has to be up. Those shoulders have to be back so that you get full capacity in your lungs. And you can't do that if you're slouched over doing your exercise because your diaphragm pushes up into your lungs and those air sacs get squished. All right? So, after you eat a meal, one of the best things you can do after a meal is to go for a little walk. And so I really encourage that. I have a difficult time sitting still after I eat. I want to take a walk. It actually helps the food to digest. Now, vigorous exercise or hard mental thinking is not good after you eat, because all the blood and attention is here in the stomach, and so the brain and the muscle are not allowed to have it. That's why you're not supposed to go swimming after you eat, because you can drown, because the body says, I have food in here, food is number one priority. After the food has been processed, then it's free to go to the muscle and to the brain. The worst class to teach in high school is right after lunch. I don't like 1 o'clock classes. When they call me up to speak, I say no, either morning class or 2 o'clock. And actually, I don't even like first period because they're still not awake. But class after lunch is the worst class. I'm glad we have a little gap after our lunch here so that you don't go, hang on me, because of the food, because everything is right here and you're trying to think while I'm listening, and the body tries to split and it says, oh, let's just go sleep. So, all right. Benefits of exercising. Let's take a look. People say, oh, I don't want to be an athlete. I don't want to compete. I don't want to be in sports. Why should I exercise? Well, those are none of the reasons why we should exercise. Here are the reasons why we should exercise. Let's take a look. First, it's going to get more oxygen into the body. The only way you can increase oxygen in your body is by breathing more and breathing heavy. And that's what exercise does. And they've discovered that cancer cells cannot thrive in an oxygen-rich environment. When they want to grow cancer cells in the laboratory, they put it in a vacuum, and cancer cells just explode. But once they start pumping in the oxygen, they stop. They stop multiplying. So you want to keep your body oxygen-rich to keep those cancer cells in check. And that's what exercise does. It will help your digestion, as I've already told you. It'll improve your circulation. It actually relaxes your nerves and your emotions. Okay, we want to be sure and take care of all of our little cell phone toys so that we don't get interrupted each time, all right? You know, those are all going straight to hell as soon as we go to heaven. I'm not going to go into that sermon. Anyway, it does relax your nerves. Have you seen somebody when they get upset, they say, you know, you need to go take a walk? And it's really true. And they may tell you to go take a hike, but it's the same idea. Get your body moving instead of your mouth, okay? So it relaxes you. It'll increase your resistance to disease. It helps your figure and your complexion, because exercise can cause you to perspire, helps clean out those pores. Exercise is also going to reduce fatigue. You have both hypertonic and hypotonic fatigue. Exercise takes care of all of those. It'll strengthen your muscles and your bones. You know, one of the reasons we have osteoporosis, and you understand what that is, don't you? It's empty or hollow bones. Your bones become like straws. They're empty. Because if you sit at home and you sit in your car and you sit at work, the body says they don't seem to have much need for these bones to support them anymore. I'm not going to waste my time supplying them and filling them up. And so we become osteoporotic. Our bones become empty and brittle. And they say, oh, she fell down and she broke her hip. You know what really happens? The hip broke and she fell. That's usually what happens as they get older, because the bones are hollow. Why? Because we sit all the time when we should be standing and putting weight. When you put weight on these bones, the body says, oh, they're using them. Fill them up, make them solid, make them strong. So exercise is going to help with those bones and those muscles. It'll help against the heart disease. You know, Psalms 119 says, I shall run the way of thy commandments, and thou shalt enlarge my heart. And the scientists know that the marathon runners have a larger heart than the average population, because the heart is a muscle. And what happens when you exercise muscles? That they get bigger. Yes. So David knew that, and he told us that. It'll sharpen your mental powers. The brain uses 4 times more oxygen than the rest of the body. So if you're not getting enough oxygen, guess which part of the body suffers the most? It's the brain. That's right. And this is what happens when you drink alcohol, because when the alcohol goes into the bloodstream, it removes the oxygen. And so you have oxygen depletion, and that's why you have slurred speech, loss of motor skill. Exercise will enhance your poise and your agility. It'll protect against sudden stress. So there we have a dozen good reasons why you should exercise, and not one good reason why you shouldn't, unless you've had an injury or you have a handicap. But other than that, you should figure out ways of getting your body moving and exercising. And there are a variety of things you can do. Find one that you like, okay? If you don't like swimming, then pick something else. At home, I have two pieces of equipment that I use. One, several times a day. It's like a little round trampoline. Have you seen those? Yes. And I bounce on that. First thing in the morning, I take my pocket Bible, and I bounce for 10 minutes, and I read the Psalms or Proverbs while I'm bouncing. And then later on, I will use it again. And then before I go to bed at night, I like to bounce on it for a few minutes because it loosens my traps here. These tend to get tight during the day. And so I just bounce on it real loose before I go to bed at night. And it's really great. I also have a CardioGlide machine that I bought at Goodwill for $25. You know, Goodwill's got a lot of good stuff. I let somebody else take the wrapper off. I'll buy it second. That's fine. But this CardioGlide machine that I got for $25, it was amazing. It kind of looks like a bicycle. But the way it works is you push on the pedals. There's no chain. You push on the pedals and you pull back and forth on the bar, and the seat goes up and down on the seat. It looks like you're riding a horse is what it looks like. And you can do it close in. You can go farther out. You can do it underhand, and you can do it back out again. And then you can adjust the tension, or it's loose or tight. And Covert Bailey, who's the exercise physiologist at MIT, says if you had to have one piece of equipment, that should be it, the CardioGlide. And if you keep checking around at your Goodwill or Salvation Army, you can probably find one. Because people buy these, and after a year, they get in the way in the garage, and the wife says, take that down to Goodwill and get it out of here. So I'm grateful for that. But the more important one is the trampoline. That if I had one piece of equipment, it would be that trampoline. That's what I would do. And a friend of mine, he travels with me sometimes, and he actually has designed one. It's the very best there is. It's called Cellar Size, and you can look that up on the internet if you want. C-E-L-L, just like your blood cells, Cellar Size. And anyway, David Hall. You type in David Hall, you'll probably find it that way too. And he has an 800 number, you can call him up. Of course, with cell phones today, 800 numbers are really not needful. So, exercise. Something else that's very easy is just using a chair that has arms in it. While you're watching your 3ABN or Discovery Channel or whatever, you can sit down in a chair and actually tone your entire body. And you can just start by just lifting your legs like this, okay? That's not very hard to do. You get stronger, lift them up at the same time. Lifting up the legs doesn't just do the legs, it also tightens your stomach, all right? And then you can go up higher if you want. Then you can go out on the end like this and do the back of your arms like this. And if you're beginning, you may want to bend your knees like this and do it a little easier. But just get the body moving and start toning. Then you can face this way and you can do push-ups like this. So you see this little chair, you can tone the entire body and gravity is free. So it doesn't matter if it's snowing or thundering or lightning, the chair is in your house, use it. Gravity, God provided. You just have to have a sturdy chair with arms. You don't want to do it on these plastic ones because they'll fly all over the place. But a sturdy chair with arms, you're good. You can tone your entire body. Now, exercise ties in with the next thing we want to talk about, and that's losing weight. This is the biggest problem in the United States, is losing weight. And I shared with you on the first day that my family's all very fluffy, and diet was one of the first four-letter words I learned when I was a kid, because all the relatives somewhere is on a diet. Oh, try the grapefruit diet. Oh, try the fish lips diet. Try this diet. And with all these new diets, and what people are trying to do is get a quick fix and not obey. This is the issue. You can have these lap bands done. You can have bypass. You can have all these other kinds of things, gastric bypass, but that's not getting victory, is it? And God wants you to have victory. He doesn't want you to take a pill. He doesn't want you to do liposuction. He wants you to obey, because if you obey, God will take care of it. It's kind of interesting. There's one of the few sins that God is going to let everybody know about is, and that if you're eating more calories than you're burning, He's going to tell everybody. Isn't that right? If you're eating more calories than you're burning, God says, I'm going to tell everybody. They're going to look at you and say, hey, they're fluffy. Okay? Now, there are worse sins. The one that I am most concerned about being around somebody, I'd much rather be around somebody fluffy than a gossip. Wouldn't you? Mm. This is a test. Take care of these machines, please. I don't think the president's going to call you here, so you really don't need it. All right. So, with losing weight, there are three simple things you can do. And if okay, do we have a glove compartment somewhere? There are three simple things that you can do for losing weight. And if you'll do these three things, I promise you, you will lose 50 to 100 pounds in 1 year. I've given this challenge to thousands of people all over the world where I've been, and I tell them, if you don't lose weight, you tell your pastor to contact me. And not one person in over 25 years has called me back and said it didn't work. This does work. Now, if you got Oreos under the bed, it's not going to work, okay? You have to follow this very carefully. You'll never be hungry, you'll never be irritable, and you will lose 50 to 100 pounds if you have that much to lose, okay, in 1 year. And safe weight loss is 1 to 2 pounds a week. The doctors don't recommend any faster than that. You took time to put the weight on. You have to follow the laws of nature to take it off. You know, these ladies, they want to lose 15 pounds in 1 week. And I say, well, what leg are you going to cut off? You know, that's ridiculous. You didn't put on 15 pounds in a week. You've got to take time to take it off. So here are the three simple things that you can do if you want to lose weight. Number one is to eat natural food. From dirt to dish, no fooling around. Because God put something in all of His food to keep you from eating too much. What is in all of God's food so that you can't eat too much? Fiber, exactly. Now, if I eat a candy bar, is my stomach full? No, because all the fiber is out of the candy bar. If I drink a Coca-Cola, is my stomach full? No, of course not. There's no fiber in Coca-Cola. Your body and your brain register you're full when there's enough fiber to trigger the mechanism. It's just like your tank in your car. When that nozzle touches that gas and it's full, it says no more. Well, you have a mechanism in your brain called the apostat gland. And that apostat gland, when this tank is full, says stop eating. The tank is full. So if you're eating candy bars and drinking Coca-Colas and eating donuts, your stomach isn't going to fill up. But what is going to fill up? Your fat cells. That's what fills up. But you're still saying, I'm hungry. Well, of course you are, because you don't have enough fiber in there for the brain to tell you, stop eating. The brain will tell you to stop eating when it fills up. And the size of this gullet area is about the size of 2 closed fists. That's the size. So when you've eaten that, and somebody says, well, Paul, I've seen you eat a lot of salad. Yeah, but you put salad in a blender and you've only got about this much left. Okay, so you can't look at salad because there's a lot of air when you're eating a salad. You smash that salad down and it's only about a half a cup to a cup of solidness. So you don't have to eat this much salad. That's not enough, all right? So, natural food. You keep eating out of jars, boxes, and cans, you start looking like jars, boxes, and cans. You want to eat food as it grows because it has lots of the fiber. And like I said, the easiest rule is to walk in the Garden of Eden and keep eating in the Garden of Eden. If Adam and Eve will recognize your food, your body will recognize the food too. Okay? And we're supposed to be getting back to the Garden of Eden. That's where we're going to be in the earth made new. So the more we can eat there, the more we're getting ready to go there. Isn't that right? The more I eat from the Garden of Eden, the more I'm getting ready to go there. So try to follow that simple rule. Second thing about losing weight is to eat bigger in the morning and light at night. A king, a prince, a pauper. At night, if you really want to lose weight, you only need to eat 2 meals a day. You say, well, that's not enough. Yes, it is. I eat 2 meals a day all the time. Now, here at camp, it's set up differently, and so I do 2.5 meals or something like that. But back at home, my schedule is, because I have my own schedule, I have breakfast at 9 o'clock, and that gives me several hours in the morning to study and to pray. And then I have my second meal about 4 o'clock. So those are the two times a day that I like to eat. But they say when you're on a road or you're at somebody's house, you have to adjust your schedule a little bit. But I know it's not going to be forever. I get to go back home and do it the way I do. But if you're going to eat a third meal, that should be the light one. That should be a little cereal, maybe some toast or something like that. And when I say cereal, I don't mean Cocoa Puffs and Count Monster Chocula. Those, some of those cereals are 60% sugar. They're basically cookies. That's what they are. They're cookies. It's not cereal. It's not grains. It's sugar. 60%. So it's pretty scary stuff. So light at night, big in the morning. If you can't eat a big breakfast, at least eat a big lunch. But America does what? Big dinner. Yeah, we have coffee and donuts or a toast for breakfast. We eat a lunch and we come home. What do we say? I'm starving. And what your body is saying, you haven't fed the cells. My cells have not gotten protein. They haven't gotten vitamins. They haven't gotten minerals. And so it says, feed me. Feed me. So try to get those cells filled in the morning or at least by lunch. Don't try to fill them up at night because you're going to bed soon and you're not going to be able to burn it. You see, when you eat food, there's only two things the body does with food. It burns it or it stores it. That's all it can do. So if you're not burning the food, the body says, you leave me no choice. I got to store it. And so some people have some big storage tanks, like my brother. I told you he topped out at over 600 pounds. So he's huge. He's about 5'8", either direction. And it's so sad. I lived with him for several months trying to help him. We sent him to Black Hills, our Adventist Health in the Dakotas. He was there for 3 months. When they took him back to the airport to go home, he asked to stop at McDonald's. And I said, you just wasted $15,000 of our parents' money. You didn't learn anything. You're going to go right. And sure enough, he gets home, he calls Domino's, he orders the liter of Mountain Dew, and the list goes on and on. But the idea is you need to get victory. That's what God wants you to do. He wants you to get victory. So we'll take a look at that in a moment. All right, the third thing is you got to exercise. Muscle is the flame that burns fat. I look at muscle as faith and fat as sin. The more faith muscle you exercise, the less fat sin you're going to have in your life. Isn't that right? Yes. This is why men can lose weight usually faster than women, because we tend to have more muscle mass. That's how we're designed, than the women. And so, you know, the husband and wife, when they both start losing weight, she gets very upset. How come you lost 6 pounds this week and I didn't, you know? And he goes, well, I don't know, you know. It's because he has more muscle mass, and so it's able to burn it up. So if you do these three simple things, you'll lose 1 to 2 pounds a week, or 50 to 100 pounds a year. Guaranteed, absolutely. You can't cheat. You can't eat between meals. You can't eat a big meal at night. You got to follow this. And if you follow this, you'll never be hungry because you're eating high fiber and your stomach's going to say, I'm full, stop, I'm done, you know. But we eat all these little diet candies and diet Coke and diet this and we think we can get away with it. No, you can't. And in fact, those diet Cokes with those artificial sugars are creating more problem. You'd be better off drinking a real Coca-Cola. I'll hold the questions at the end, okay? Otherwise, we get bogged down. But hold that thought and I'll get to it, okay? What? Well, give me a chance. You're a little step ahead of me. All right. Now, while you're trying to lose weight, you want to be careful with olives, nuts, and avocados. Why? They're high in fat. Okay, so ease up on the olives, the nuts, and the avocados until you get to your normal weight. But I guarantee, and people say, well, you know, I have a glandular problem. That's why I can't lose weight. You know, the glandular is the saliva gland. That's the problem. I was growing up in the 50s. We used to watch the POWs come out of the prisoner of war camps. There was nobody that came out of the POW camp fluffy. Nobody said, oh, I had a glandular problem in the war camp, and so that's why I'm big like this. No, you can count the ribs on everybody. I don't care how they go in. They're all coming out skin and bones. So you can't tell me it's a glandular program, or we'll send you to a POW camp, and we'll see how that gland is working. So don't hide behind something. Don't hear a news item and say, oh, that's me, that's me, that's why I'm this way. No. Yeah, if you obey, the body will take care of itself. So, let's find out what some of the experts are telling us. First of all, I want to take a look at a couple of statements from David and from Solomon. Wise men. And they gave us some good counsel. The Bible, by the way, is replete with stuff on health. From Genesis to Revelation, almost every book talks about health of some degree. It talks about rest, it talks about sunlight, it talks about water. It's all here in the Bible. And I happen to notice it as a health educator. It catches my attention. I say, oh, that's a health principle, and I mark it. Well, that's a health principle. And I have dozens of texts in the Bible dealing with health, but we're limited here with time, so I'm just going to share a couple from Psalms and a couple from Proverbs. In Psalms 104, verse 14, it says, He, meaning God, causes the grass to grow for the cattle. So the cattle are supposed to be eating what? Grass. Are our cattle eating grass today? No, they're not. They're giving them rotten chickens, and they're getting them spoiled meat, and they're putting meat in a vegetarian machine. You know, a cow is a vegetarian machine. And so our beef is going crazy. So it says, he causes the grass to grow for the cattle and vegetation for the labor of man. Oh, what are we supposed to be eating? Vegetation. Yes. So that he may bring forth food from the earth. Our food is supposed to come from where? The slaughterhouse? No, it's supposed to come from the earth. It comes out of the ground or out of the tree. Now catch this, verses 27 and 28. He's talking about God's people. He says, they all wait for thee, God, to give them their food in due seasons. Well, that's interesting. What food comes in seasons? Fruits and vegetables. The animals are available year-round, aren't they? We're supposed to be eating food that comes in what? Seasons. That means fruits, nuts, grains, and vegetables. That comes in seasons. There's the almond season, the walnut, the grape, the strawberry season. Those food come in seasons. That's what we're supposed to be eating. Thou dost give it to them, and they gather it up. What kind of food do we gather up? Fruits and vegetables. We run and chase animals and stalk them, don't we? But we're not supposed to be eating food that we have to chase or run after. We're supposed to be eating food that we what? It's sitting there. It's sitting there. The food you eat, you're supposed to just pick it up. And fruits and vegetables and grains, and they're sitting there. That's the food you eat, the gathering food, not the chasing food, not the fishhook food, okay? Not the bullet food, okay? It says, the food you're supposed to be eating, you're supposed to gather it up. It says, and then it says, thou dost open thy hand, meaning God, and you satisfy us with good. Now, I can see God opening his hand, and you can see the grapes come tumbling out, and the fruit, and the potatoes, and the apples, and the oranges, and the asparagus, and all that. I can see all those fresh things coming out of God's hands. What I can't see is God taking one of his living creatures, putting it in the palm of his hands, crushing the life out of that animal until the blood comes gushing down his arms, and then says, here, open it. Eat this. When God opens his hands, the food that's going to come out for us is the food that he planted on this earth for us, not the animals that he gave to us. And we'll talk about that in just a moment. All right, Psalms 141, verses 3 and 4. Set a guard, O Lord, over my mouth. So David needs help here, doesn't he? He says, Lord, I can't keep my mouth shut. Set a guard over my mouth. Keep watch over the doors of my lips. Do not incline mine heart to any evil thing, to practice deeds of wickedness with men who do iniquity, and do not let me eat their delicacies. Really? So do you see what they're saying here? These people that eat delicacies are evil, wicked, and do iniquity. That's what it says here. These are my words. These are David's words. Psalms 141, verses 3 and 4. Now, a couple of verses from Solomon, and then we'll move on. Proverbs 21, verse 23, he repeats what David says in the Psalms. Psalms 21, verse 23. Excuse me, Proverbs. Make sure you're paying attention. 21, 23, he who guards his mouth and his tongue guards his soul from troubles. You want to protect your soul? Guard your mouth and your tongue. You'll protect your soul. Yes, this is one of the avenues to your soul. And then the last one, Proverbs 18, verse 21. This one's really striking. Proverbs 18, 21. Death and life are in the power of the tongue. Whoa, that's pretty clear, isn't it? You see, the tongue has two primary functions, to taste and to talk. Isn't that right? And death and life are in those two activities, aren't they? Are your words cruel, mean, critical? Are they encouraging, loving, and kind? Are you eating things that destroy this body? Are you eating things that restore it? Death and life are in the power of the tongue. You get to choose how it's going to work. Now I want to read to you a couple of statements from my favorite health educator, Ellen White. I make no apologies for her. You know, when she first wrote some of this stuff, the medical industry laughed and scoffed at her, told her she was a fool. But do you know today you can find outstanding, solid research from medical universities agreeing with over 95% of what she said? I'm not waiting for them to get the last five. I'm going to go with her. Listen to these statements. I was grateful that as a new Adventist, I found these because they helped me begin my Christian journey very well and very solid. In no other way has Satan come with his temptations to fallen humankind as successfully as through the appetite. This is his big success. If this is his big success, I need to pay some attention here, don't I? Yes. Satan is constantly on the alert to bring the race fully under his control. His strongest hold on man is through the appetite. This he seeks to stimulate in every possible way. That's an interesting word she used, isn't it? Stimulate. A lot of our foods are full of stimulants. That's why they have labels. It's full of stimulants. And she says Satan's strongest hold on us is this appetite, which he wants to stimulate. I'll show you later. Through inducing men to yield to his temptations, he can control us. And through no class of temptations does he achieve greater success than those addressed to the appetite. This is his greatest success. He says, man, I got a hot one here. This one really works for these guys. I got their appetite. If he can control the appetite, he can control the whole man. He doesn't have to worry about your music, your entertainment, how you dress, who you hang out with. He says, I just want your appetite. Because if I got that one, I got the rest of you. I got all the others covered. And this last one. This one was the alarm, the red flag for me. This one got my attention. The controlling power of appetite will prove the ruin of thousands who, if they had conquered on this point, what point? Appetite. They would have had the moral power to gain the victory over every other temptation. Wow. When I read that, I said, this is a bell ringer. This is a bell ringer. Because you see, as a new Adventist, I didn't know where to start. What about my music? What about the way I dress? What about the people I hang out with? What about my entertainment, the movies I'm going to? Where do I start? Where do I start? And it's like a long line of dominoes, right? All these things that Satan wants you to get to do is like a long line of dominoes. And you know how you knock down dominoes? You got to knock down the first one. And what is that first one? Appetite. Because she says if we knock that one down, we will have moral power for all of the rest of the temptations. This is the key one. This is the one that gets us started. Because when we have victory and appetite, we will now have moral power to take care of all of the others. This last thought, as we draw near the close of time, brothers and sisters, I think we're there. As we draw near the close of time, Satan's temptation to indulge appetite will be more powerful and more difficult. Friends, it's not going to get easier. It's going to get harder. Because every year he's putting things on the shelf that don't grow anywhere. You know that, don't you? New packages, they got to make it bright and shiny because they got to convince you to eat something that doesn't grow. That's pretty tricky. How are we going to get these people to eat stuff that doesn't grow? Oh, we'll just put it in bright packages and make little songs and tell them they deserve a break today. Yeah, pretty serious stuff. We're not going to make one rule for everybody. Everybody has to make adjustments according to some of their tastes. I don't like black-eyed peas. I'm sorry, I'm a Yankee. I don't like hominy. But I like other things. I like other beans. I like other grains. And so I eat those. So you make adjustments accordingly, but make sure you're getting food from every category. You have to be sure you're getting all the different fruits, nuts, grains, and vegetables. First president of the American Medical Association was Dr. Reuben Massey. As the first president of the AMA, Dr. Massey had the responsibility to safeguard the health of the American public and to correctly represent the medical profession. So he had a big task ahead of him, didn't he? He did much research around the world. And finally, Congress says, well, Dr. Massey, as the first president of the AMA, we want to hear what your recommendations are. And he went to Congress and he said, my recommendation for the United States is that they become a vegetarian nation. Isn't that interesting? The first president of the AMA wanted America to become a vegetarian nation. However, there were lobbyists and business people who saw they weren't going to make any money if we went that route. And so Dr. Massey's proposal was defeated. And America did not become educated as a vegetarian nation. And our 8 and 10 story hospitals are the result of that choice that we made. You say, well, vegetarianism, that's for tree huggers. That's for earth muffins. That's for those hippies. No, no, no. Vegetarianism has been around a long time. In fact, about 6,000 years. It started in the Garden of Eden. But there are a lot of famous people throughout history who have been vegetarians. I know you'll recognize their names: Plato, Socrates, Da Vinci, Gandhi, Isaac Newton, Albert Schweitzer, Leo Tolstoy, Thomas Edison, Einstein, Benjamin Franklin. These guys knew that a plant-based diet was the healthiest diet. Now, toward the end there, Ben Franklin backslid, and you saw what happened. But he was on the right track for a while. The Journal of the American Medical Association, one of the most prestigious medical journals, oh, that's Dr. Massey, if you wanted to look him up. Journal of the American Medical Association said that a vegetarian diet can prevent 97% of our coronary occlusion. That's heart attack, the number one killer in North America. A vegetarian diet can virtually wipe it out. But we haven't done it. Why not? What's the problem? Oh, you guys haven't figured out the problem? Huh? Appetite? Yeah, we like it, don't we? Now I'm going to give you your first physiology lesson today. There are no brains in here. None. God put the brains on top for a reason, to control everything else underneath. Anything under the brain gets control of the system. It may destroy the system. There are no brains in here, only perverted taste buds. You have to use the brains. All right? So, we like it, and the advertisers are convincing us. And if you don't think the advertising works, they would have quit spending those billions of dollars a long time ago. But they're spending more and more and more every year because they can convince you to eat something that doesn't grow out of the ground or out of a tree. They're convincing you. And we do. We eat stuff that doesn't grow anywhere. Where did that come from? A package? Really? A package? All right. Let's take a look at this human body and see what it is designed for. Your car is an internal combustion engine, right? We cause gasoline or diesel to run that engine. What about this engine? What does it run on? Well, let's see how it's designed, and that should tell us what it should run on. Let's begin, first of all, with your jaw structure, your mandibles. I want to see if you can do what I do. Can you move your jaw from left to right, like this? Okay, that's good. How about up and down, like this? Jim, are you doing that? I want to make sure. Now, here's the tricky one. Can you move your jaw forward and backward, like this? Ah, don't you look silly? All right. You can move your jaw in three directions. Only vegetarian animals can do this. The jaw of a meat-eating animal will only go up and down. You have never seen a dog eat like this. He can't. He's a meat eater, and his jaw will only go up and down. But goats, horses, cows, your mama, jaw goes like this, doesn't it? Yes, because it's the jaw structure of a construction for bulky, fibrous plant food, not flesh. Now, what about your dental structure? Do we have any dentists here or hygienists? Any dentists? Really? All right. Well, check with your dentist. He'll tell you what I said was true. Your dental structure says you're supposed to be eating plants. Your molars and your bicuspids in the back are flat on top, they're round on the side. You have four canine incisors, two on the top, two on the bottom. The rest of your teeth are flat. Now these are for like the apples and the carrots. But the rest of it, are your teeth sharp and pointed like a wolf or a bear? No, they're not. No. If you take these teeth and you sneak up to a cow and you dust off his hind quarter and you use these teeth to penetrate his hide, all you're going to get is kicked, okay? Because these teeth are not designed to puncture his flesh, is it? No, it's designed for grinding seeds, nuts, berries, and fruit. That's what it's designed for. Let's continue. Your saliva. You just send a sample of your saliva down to a laboratory, look at it under electron microscope, they would find a very high concentration of specialized enzymes that are designed to break down starches. This only occurs in vegetarian animals. So you're busted. Your saliva gave you up. They would look at your saliva and say, I don't know where this came from, but it's from a plant-eating animal. And that's what's in your saliva. When you sweat off your skin, as vegetarian animals do. Meat-eating animals sweat off their tongue. And what about your claws? You do not have claws. You have the most unique food-gathering apparatus on this planet. You're the only creature on planet Earth that has an opposable thumb. Soft padded fingers, so that when you gather the berries, the fruits, and the vegetables, they're not destroyed. They stay fresh and whole. Have you ever seen a lion go berry picking? He can't do it. He's designed to slash the side of that animal and rip the flesh from his body. But your fingers aren't going to do that. But man likes to pretend he has claws, doesn't he? Oh yeah, he sits at the table and he picks up a fork and he picks up a knife and he goes, "Rawr! I'm a meat-eating animal. Look at my claws." Who are you kidding? Certainly not this body. Now, HCl, that's hydrochloric acid. Meat-eating animal produces 10 times more hydrochloric acid than you do. You do not produce enough hydrochloric acid in your vegetarian machine to neutralize the poisons that are in meat. That's right, I said poisons in meat. Because biologically speaking, meat is 75% toxic to the human system. It's full of cholesterol, hormones, fat, blood, urine, waste products. 75% of that flesh is not good in this machine. That's like putting Kool-Aid in your gas tank. You don't do it. It's not good for the machine. And scientifically, the laboratory tells us meat is toxic to the human body. But I like the taste. And it has protein. Yes, it does. But God put protein in almost everything. You can't be protein deficient. In fact, there's never been a medical case of protein deficiency in the United States, ever. Unless you're malnourished, you cannot be protein deficient. It's impossible. If you have enough food to eat, you have enough protein. But the meat industry has terrified us, saying, if I don't eat meat, I'm not going to get enough protein, or I'm not going to get a complete protein. Complete protein, what is that word? They made it up. The scientists don't recognize that word. There's no such thing as a complete protein. Either it's a protein or it's not. But the meat people said, we have a complete protein. And so you need to chew on us because we're the ones who have a complete protein. There's no such thing in the dietitian's handbook, complete protein. That's a fairy tale. It's like, come and see Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. We have them. Come on. All right, the biggest giveaway of all, besides this list, is this amazing digestive tract that you have. You have an extremely complex digestive tract broken up into several sections. Your digestive tract is very long and convoluted. The digestive tract of vegetarian animals is 10 times the length of the animal's torso. And guess what? Yours is about 30 to 40 feet long. It requires fiber to go through this digestive tract. The digestive tract of a meat-eating animal is very short, only 3 times the length of the animal's torso. So that when the meat goes in, it can evacuate out quickly because it's a short tract. But when meat goes inside this digestive tract, because it's 30 to 40 feet long, and this also includes cheese, do you know what happens with this inside here? It gets impacted. It gets stuck. When you eat fruits and vegetables, they pass through your body in 12 to 15 hours, depending upon what you ate and how much. That's how God designed it. He put fiber in all of his food, so the fiber is like a sponge. It pushes all the way through. But when you put meat in the digestive tract, do you know how long it takes meat and cheese to get through this digestive tract because there's no fiber in it? Up to 3 days. 3 days. How many of you women will put some chicken out and 3 days later prepare it for your family? You wouldn't think of that. Put some hamburger out to thaw. 3 days later, you fry it up. No, it'd be rotten. What do you think happens to this inside here for 3 days? It's warm, dark acid. Almost 100 degrees in here, isn't it? 98.6. Do you know what's going to happen to flesh inside a warm, dark acid environment? Putrefaction. It's going to rot, which means it's going to poison your blood. It's going to make you slow, irritable, and sluggish. I'm giving you straight biology. You see, the food industry can't lie to us anymore. We have fiber optic cameras that go down your nasal passage, down your esophagus, into here, and it's just like a periscope. We can watch everything that goes on. We know what happens when you eat a carrot or when you eat a Big Mac. We know what happens when you eat a potato or when you eat a hot dog or some chicken licking. We know what happens. Colonel Cholesterol can't lie to us anymore. We know what's going on inside. There's no more guesswork. So you get to choose. You get to choose. I'm not telling you have to be a vegetarian, but I will tell you that there are 200 communicable diseases in the animal kingdom. And of those 200 diseases in the animal kingdom, half of them, 100, will cross the species barrier into humans. Have you ever heard of E. coli, Jakobs-Creutzfeldt disease, and a few others? 100, in fact, will cross in. Now, I have enough disease in my kingdom, the human. I don't need 100 more from the animal kingdom. And I can get those 100 diseases from the animal by eating him or living too close to him. So you better be careful about your proximity to animals. Because if you live too close to them, you can contract 100 diseases from that animal. I want to stay as disease-free as possible. Now, some of the other experts, Dr. T. Colin Campbell, many of you have heard of, who did the China study. He's the nutritional biochemist at Cornell University, professor emeritus, which means this man is held in highest esteem at Cornell. Cornell and Oxford teamed together to do this China study, and he was asked to be the lead doctor because he's such an expert. I've met him twice personally, and one time we had a two-hour conversation because his driver was late. And so Dr. Campbell and I talked for 2 hours. I fired questions at him like a machine gun, and he fired right back because being a university professor, he has all of this stuff on the top of his tongue. And at the end of the 2 hours, I guess it was an hour that time, yeah, the driver showed up and he says, Paul, I got to go. But he says, I want to tell you something. You and I are on the same page. We're going against a multi-billion dollar industry and we have our work cut out for us. But one thing we have on our side, we have the truth. We have the truth. They have lies and scientific distorted studies that are not true and that are not in agreement with the big institutions. You take a look at the big institutions like Johns Hopkins, Virginia Mason, Mayo Clinic. You know what? They're all on the same page. They're all holding hands, singing the same song. You may find a strange report from the University of Wyoming that says, if you boil chicken and cook it with bird lips, it's okay for you. Yeah. Who sponsored that study? Yeah. The bird industry, all right? You got to look at who does the study because that can be partiality. You're hearing all these good reports about dark chocolate. You know who's sponsoring these studies? Hershey and Nestle Corporation, of course. They're not going to tell you there are 19 toxins in chocolate, one of which is theobromine, which goes directly to your nervous system, not to mention the caffeine. Why do you think little kids freak out when you give them chocolate? Why do you think they get a whipping an hour later? Because these kids are blasted on drugs and you're the dealer. It's really true. I'm just giving you the facts. Don't get mad at me, okay? I want to read to you a statement from Dr. Campbell that he made to a room full of cardiologists. These heart specialists says, Dr. Campbell, please tell us what to do for our heart patients. And he told them in one short paragraph exactly what to do for their heart patients. So they listened on the end of their seats. Here's the expert, nutritional biochemist, Cornell University. What's he going to tell us? They get out their notepads and recorders, and he goes, why must we be reticent or reluctant about recommending a diet which we know is safe and healthy? And they're going, diet, no, medication. We're talking medication, surgery. What was the four-letter word? Diet. Why must we be reticent about recommending a diet which we know is safe and healthy? As scientists, we can no longer take the attitude that the public cannot benefit from information they're not ready for. You see, you can't handle it. You've been advertised and brain to so long that you can't handle the truth. People ask me all the time, well, not so much now, but back in the 80s and 90s, don't drink milk, where do you get your calcium? Don't eat meat, where do you get your protein? You know what? They haven't been asking that so much the last 5 years because more and more data is coming out and everybody is finding out. It wasn't just a select few who did their homework. You're hearing it everywhere, in newspapers, magazines, on the evening news. All right, he continues, we must have the integrity as scientists to tell the public the truth and let them decide what to do with it. We can't force them to follow the guidelines, and I'm not going to force you either. I'm just going to give you a choice. You'll always be my friend. Maybe not for as long, but you'll always be my friend. Okay? We can't force them to follow these guidelines, but we need to give them these guidelines and let them decide. We must tell the public that a diet of roots, stems, seeds, flowers, fruits, and leaves is the healthiest diet and the only diet we can promote, endorse, and recommend. Now that's from the nutritional biochemist at Cornell University. Diet is the answer. National Academy of Sciences and the World Health Organization at the United Nations decided they were going to do some intensive study to improve health around the world. So this is National Academy of Sciences, World Health Organization at the United Nations. They said America and the world is falling apart, and we need to figure out what to do to help them. So they did all of this study, and they came up with some guidelines to help the entire planet improve their health. And here's what they came up with. Lower your salt intake, avoid alcohol, reduce fat and cholesterol, exercise so you have the proper weight, moderate amount of protein. How much? Moderate. Most Americans eat 200% more protein than their body can handle. You are not a protein machine. You are a carbohydrate machine. There's no question. You do not handle a lot of protein. Eight servings a day of leafy vegetables, especially green leafy vegetables, fresh fruits, especially citrus, whole grains, legumes, nuts, and seeds. Nowhere in this list was meat or dairy. Did they make a mistake? Did they forget something? No. The National Academy of Sciences and the World Health Organization recognizes that if we're going to improve world health, we've got to go to a plant-based diet. It's just that simple. What about fish? Jesus ate fish. Well, if he did, he didn't eat the fish you and I are eating today. And let's make that very clear. Fish. Dr. Harshberger is in charge of cancers and tumors of lower animals at the Smithsonian Institute. And they went to the Smithsonian and said, Dr. Harshberger, tell us about the fish industry. And he said, fish get real cancers and tumors from polluted waters, and they transfer these chemicals up the food chain into humans. Yes. They transfer it. Whoa, I got 28 minutes? Okay, we're going to have to jump around a little bit here. When I was lecturing in Fiji, have you seen where Fiji is on the globe, by the way? There are no neighbors to Fiji. There's nobody for 1,000 miles. And I was lecturing on Vanuatu Island, and a man from the government stood up. And he told the audience, he says, you need to pay attention to what this guy is telling you because he's done his homework. What he told you is absolutely true. I work for the government. I work at food inspection. We have fish in Fiji that have mercury and lead poisoning. And I said, come on. Where did your fish get mercury and lead? You're out here in the Pacific. You have no neighbors. And he said, you need to understand something. And then he opened up a big window for me that I never thought of before. It's very logical. He said, Paul, fish migrate. Birds migrate. Ocean currents travel all over the planet. Air currents travel all over the planet. And even though you may be in a very pristine, regulated, controlled area, you've got water, air, fish, and birds that are coming in from places where the leader of the country was a dictator or a communist. And every time you find dictators or communists in charge, we find DDT, we find atomic waste and pollution, and we find stuff that goes into the water, into the air, that the earth can't clean up anymore. You see, my friend, Mother Earth is dying. She's dying. Her cycle doesn't clean her anymore. When we get rain, it's called acid rain, and it destroys crops and animals. I taught the Eskimos above the Arctic Circle in Kotzebue, Alaska. They told me they had acid rain. Their fish are polluted, and so is their water. I said, how did that happen? And they said the acid rain from Russia came across the Bering Straits and polluted everything. What is Russia? Communist. Rules? There are none. You see the problem? The planet is dying. Every country I go to, I've been on 5 continents now, and when I go to the universities, I like to talk to the people who are in the Department of Oceanography. I like to talk to the soil and earth agriculture people, and I like to talk to the atmospheric people about the air. And you know what all of them are telling me? All of them? We're running out. We're running out. We don't have good air. We don't have good water. And the soil is depleted. Mother Earth is dying. And when she dies, so do we. She cannot support life. She can't clean herself anymore with the rain like it used to. She ends up polluting herself with the rain and the water. Everything is going south. So, the government said, well, we need to do some study about fish. Of course, the fish industry were holding their breath, and the report did not come out good. U.S. Fish and Wildlife said, we want to find out what happened to all the DDTs and all the sprays that we put on our plants. They're banned in the United States now, but they're still being actively used in other countries. I've been to them. They're still being actively used. But in our country, it's banned because we realize the danger. So the U.S. government said, we need to find out where PCB went. We want to find out that insecticide because it's deadly and it doesn't go away. It stays a long time. So they said, we'll study birds because different birds have different diets. So we should be able to find out where it is. That was a good idea. So they studied birds that ate at the bottom of the food chain first. You understand what the food chain is? The bottom of it is plants, then it goes up to insects, smaller animals, larger animals, and then carnivore. That's called the top of the food chain. Now, man likes to pretend that's where he's at. I'm the carnivore. I'm at the top of the food chain. Well, if you are, you're in big trouble because God didn't put you at the top of the food chain. You're not supposed to be up there. You're supposed to be down here where the plants are. So, Fish and Wildlife said, first we're going to study birds that eat at the bottom of the food chain, berries, nuts, and seeds. And they opened up their liver because if you want to find a toxin in an animal, you open up the liver because the liver is a detoxifying organ of the body. So when they opened up the liver of these birds that ate at the bottom of the food chain, the berries, nuts, and seeds, they found out that the PCB was only 0.2. And they said, wow, this is terrific. It's almost gone. It's not on the plants. It left. So where did it go? So they moved up the food chain to study worms and insects. And when they opened up the liver of these birds, it had tripled to 0.65. And they said, aha, we're getting warm. It's concentrated in the insects. So they moved up the food chain another step to rodents, mice, and snake. Okay, they eat lots of insects. They eat lots of other things. And when they opened up the liver of these animals that ate the rodents and the snakes, it had jumped to 50. And they said, ho-ho, we're really getting warm now. So then they went to the Atlantic and the Pacific coast, and they studied birds that ate seafood and mussels and shellfish and so on. And when they opened up the liver of the birds that ate seafood, the PCB concentration jumped to 900. They said, bingo, we found it, we found it. Those sprays and toxins washed off the plants, went into the water table, out to the ocean, and that's where it's at. It's in the ocean. Yes. I have an uncle who works for intelligence, and he asked me, he says, how come you don't eat seafood? I said, I don't eat anything that goes to the bathroom. And so he says, well, I wouldn't eat anything that come out of the ocean. I said, why not? And he says, remember when we used to try to get rid of atomic waste in the barrels? And every time we tried to bury them someplace, people would scream and hell it, you know, hallelujah, stop this, don't do this, you know. And I said, oh yeah, I remember that. He said, have you heard those people screaming and yelling anymore? I said, no, what did you do? He said, well, we decided to do something different. And I said, so where are those barrels of atomic waste going? He said, well, we spray paint them black. And in the middle of the night, about 3 o'clock in the morning, we put them in big chain nets, we hook them up to helicopters, we take them a few miles out, and we open up the chain, and all those barrels of atomic waste go out into the ocean. I said, really? And he says, yeah, from time to time, there's a rough storm out there, and some of these barrels do get ruptured, and they break open. And I said, really? And he goes, yeah. He says, it's a wonder people who eat seafood don't glow at night. And I said, well, that's very interesting. He says, well, he says, you can't prove it, and I won't give you the information, and if you tell anybody, I'll kill you. No, seriously, he said, it's very secret now, but that's how we get rid of the atomic waste. And nobody's the wiser, because they don't see anybody with the black barrels. Where are you going with those? Oh, go to sleep. We'll take care of it. Yeah, that's what happens out in the ocean. All right. So, what does the Bible have to say about this? Does the Bible give us good instructions on diet? Yes, it does. God was very concerned. The first book, Genesis, the first chapter, number 1, God gives us our diet. He didn't wait at all. Genesis 1:29 was the original diet given to Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. That was a fruitarian diet. Nothing died in the Garden of Eden. Adam and Eve didn't eat any vegetables. There were no vegetables. There was only the fruit of the plants, and that's what they ate. But after sin and sickness came into the world, God said, you're going to need the healing medicinal qualities of the herbs and the vegetables. And so new stuff came into the garden, and the herbs and vegetables were there. Now, Adam became a vegetarian. Nowhere in the Bible do you see where God says, this is what I want you to eat again. These are the only two verses, Genesis 1:29 and Genesis 3:18, where you see God say, this is what I want you to eat. Now, I know what you're thinking of, the flood, and I'm with you. After the vegetation was wiped out, God said, all right, we have an emergency. I'm going to have to give you permission. Is this what he wanted? No, it's not what he wanted. Was this the ideal? No, it's not. But he says, I'm going to give you permission now to eat meat. It's not my desire, but we're in a problem. I'm going to let you eat meat, but I'm going to put some restrictions on this meat. The fruits and vegetables, it was any and all you wanted. But when it comes to the meat, there's some restrictions. I'm not going to let you go whole hog on this one. And so God says, I have put some animals on this planet to clean up after you. They're living garbage cans. Stay out of the garbage cans. All right? They clean up after us, don't they? And God was so thorough, he put these animals in the air, he put them on the ground, and he put them in the ocean, didn't he? They're everywhere to clean up after us. They do a good job. They're living garbage cans. Stay out of the garbage cans. Now God said, there are some clean animals that I'm going to allow you to eat. However, before you eat these clean animals, you need to remove two things from them so they'll be safer to eat. What two things did God say have to be removed from the clean meat before you're allowed to eat them? Blood and fat. Oh, you know this. Every Christian I know that eats meat eats fat and blood. Are you allowed to do that? No, you're not. Can you claim to be following the Bible if you eat fat and blood? No, you can't. It's clear. Leviticus chapter 17, Deuteronomy chapter 12, Genesis chapter 9. Look at those chapters. Very clear. There's more on fat and blood than there is on clean and unclean. God says, if you eat the blood of another animal, I will require your life. Pretty clear, isn't it? Because blood carries the disease, doesn't it? Where do you think leukemia cells flow through? The blood. Cancer cells, the blood. So God says, get the blood out, get the fat out. Now, can you buy this meat? Huh? Yeah, you have to go to a kosher Jewish deli. Now, I was in New York and Connecticut, and I saw some Hasidic Jews. So I stopped one and I said, have you ever eaten kosher meat? And they said, yes, of course. And I says, what's it like? And they said, you don't want seconds. And I said, really? And they said, no, there's no flavor. It's like eating a tough, chewy rubber band. Really? I said, yeah, because you've taken out the salty urine, you've taken out the rich fat, you've taken out the succulent blood, there's nothing left. It's just tough, chewy rubber band. And that's exactly what God had in mind. He didn't want you enjoying this. You have to drain the fat and the blood out. If you're going to follow the Bible, the fat and the blood have to be removed. Again, there are 200 communicable diseases in the animal kingdom. You and I can get 100 or half of them if we consume those. Wow, I got 12 minutes. Okay. Let me ask you a basic question. Why did God give us the animals in the first place? What are they for? Huh? No. He didn't give us the animals to shorten our lives. Why did he give them to us in the Garden of Eden? Huh? No, that's killing them. He gave us live animals for two reasons. To be our companions and to be our servants. That's what they were for. They weren't meant to cut, to stab, to wear, to chew. They were to be our companions and to be our servants. That's what they were for. Now, if you go around eating your servants, are you going to have any servants left? No. When Adam saw the first cow, he did not name him Pot Roast. When he saw the bacon, he didn't say your name is Bacon. He had no intention of eating these animals. These were his friends. He had a way of communicating to them that way some people communicate with their pets. And I've seen that happen. Yes, they were his companions. They were his servants. They were not dinner. They were not dinner. All right? So that's why the animals were given to us. Not to eat, but to be our companions. Now, I was in New York and Connecticut, as I told you a couple years ago. And they said, you know how they catch lobster? I said, no, I grew up in Alaska. We have king crab, but we don't have lobster. And he said, you want to know how they do it? I said, yeah, tell me. So they said, lobster is in season. You can't go and get it anytime you want. Otherwise, it'll all be gone. So they have only seasons that you can go. 2 weeks before lobster season shows up, the boats line up in the harbor getting ready because the first ones out get the most lobster. So they'll pay a full crew for 2 weeks to do nothing but just to be the first ones out. I said, yeah, it makes sense. And he goes, and then when the gun goes off and they can go get the lobster, they all go charging to the sewer pipes of New York because that's where the lobster are, eating the raw sewage that comes out of those pipes. So you see, these guys are recyclers. What you ate 10 days ago, you may be eating again when you eat that lobster. God said, don't eat them. They're living garbage cans. Leave them alone. And if you're going to eat the clean, fat and blood have to be gone. And believe me, when you take that out, you're not going to want a second. Because there's no more salty urine, there's no more rich fat, there's no more succulent blood, but there's also no more cholesterol and no more disease. And that's why God said take the fat and the blood out, is to take care of that. But we chose to rebel. Now, all right, I'm gonna show you a video. Is the guy there to show the video? Yeah. Because we're going to talk about dairy tomorrow. Dairy is scary. By the way, you say, does this guy leave anything alone? No, I don't. I love you. That's why I'm telling you this, okay? So let's show the video. Let's see, what's my time on this? We've got two left, and I've got 10 minutes. And so we have time to show the heart surgery. That's 8 minutes. Let's show the heart surgery. If you're a little squeamish, you might want to blink your eyes. This is a real open heart surgery in the operating room. There are no actors. There's no pretend here.
One of the physicians who helped me understand why is Dr. Michael Clapper.
Thank you.
I first woke up, so to speak, when I was working on the anesthesia service, learning how to put people to sleep. And I was seeing my patients for the next day's surgery for coronary artery bypass surgery in order to bypass clogged arteries in their heart. Because it was late at night, I drew the man's blood test, and when I took the blood to the laboratory and had it processed, I couldn't believe my eyes. Now, normally, this liquid layer floating on top of the blood clot is quite transparent. It's yellow, but quite clear. You can see right through it. The blood in this patient's tube, however, was anything but clear. The serum floating on his clot was thick and greasy white. It looked like glue. In fact, it stuck to the sides of the blood tube when I shook the tube. I went back to the patient. I said, Mr. Phillips, did you eat before you came to the hospital tonight? He said, yes. I said, what did you have? He said, I had a cheeseburger and a milkshake. And when he said that, I realized that what I was looking at in his tube was all the fat in the beef burger, all the butter fat in the cheese, and the butter fat in the ice cream and in the milkshake. And all this fat had oozed out into his blood and actually turned his blood fatty. Well, 30, 40, 50 years of keeping your blood very fatty creates changes in the blood vessels that are very dangerous.
Over the years, arteries can become clogged with fatty material. Then a blood clot can form, blocking the blood flow completely. If the artery leads to the heart, the lack of oxygen can cause heart muscle to die. That's a heart attack. If the clogged artery leads to the brain, the patient has a stroke.
The next morning, we took Mr. Phillips to the operating room, and I put him to sleep, and the surgeon opened up his chest. And from these arteries, he began pulling out yellow, greasy deposits of fatty material called atherosclerosis. You know, if you were to die of a heart attack, and it's the most common cause of death in the country today, you might have an autopsy performed. It's a fairly common procedure. It used to be more common, but it's still done many, many times. What would happen is your body would be laid out on the autopsy table, and they would cut open your chest and dig around in there and find the coronary artery, the artery feeding the heart, that had gotten plugged up, depriving the heart of its flow of oxygen and blood, killing it, killing you. And they'd find that artery and they'd ream it out. They literally pull out a thick sausage-shaped piece of fatty, waxy material that killed you. And they send it very carefully down to the pathology lab.
Next day, the results come back, and they always say the same thing. This has been done approximately 3 million times in medical research in the world. The results always say the same thing. They say, in effect, saturated fat and cholesterol. Now, never once have they come back and said, broccoli and tofu.
When I saw all the fat in that patient's blood, I began to think about my own blood. I had done most of my growing up on a dairy farm in Wisconsin, and I was eating large amounts of meats and cheese, and I realized that I, too, had a risk rate of 50% for clogging up my arteries and causing a heart attack or stroke.
A high-fat diet is also among the factors suspected in certain types of cancer. Dr. John McDougall.
Well, the first clue that we got on breast cancer and diet was when people looked around the world and they found in different countries they had different rates of breast cancer. For example, in Japan, the risk of breast cancer among their women is very low, whereas in the United States, it's many, many times higher. In fact, about six times as high.
In countries where people eat less fat, the rates for breast cancer are low. The more fat people eat, the higher the rate for breast cancer. That could be a coincidence, or it could be a clue. One of the most comprehensive studies in world medical history on diet and disease is being conducted in China under the direction of Dr. Colin Campbell of Cornell University.
The study is, in fact, quite unique when compared to other studies in the past, in the sense that we measured so many different kinds of things. As I mentioned, we measured 367 items of information that are subsequently being published that were data that we're happy with. And so in that sense, it's perhaps one of the largest studies that has ever been conducted on the causes of disease. And so it was an ideal opportunity to go to China to have a look at what people are doing in these different regions that are so unique to cause them to get cancers in some places and not in others. And so this survey, which was, of course, very large, it included a total of 100 adults in each of the 65 counties, or a total of 6,500 people.
T. Colin Campbell did a very important study that really captured everybody's attention. He studied the people in China and correlated their diet with their chance of getting various diseases, including breast cancer. And he found that when you ate a very low-fat diet, you know, lots of rice and vegetables and very little oil and very little meat, that you had a very low incidence of breast cancer.
For the individual cancers, in China, breast cancer is much lower, colon cancer is much lower. In our country, they comprise, along with lung cancer, the three chief cancers.
To discover the reasons for low cancer rates, Dr. Campbell's researchers collected hundreds of items of information from each person. Heredity, medical history, diet, and exercise. The evidence seems to point to one factor.
Well, in China, the animal food consumption is about 10% of the total protein intake, compared in this country to 70% on average. We really consume an extraordinary amount of animal foods in this country compared to China.
The current way in which most Americans eat has never been seen before in human history. Never before have we eaten so much fat and protein on any given day. People have bacon and eggs for breakfast and cheeseburgers for lunch and pizzas for dinner, and they're eating tremendous amounts of fat and protein.
And the message is very clear. If you want to reduce your risk of cancer, you eat less meat, less dairy, less fat in general, including vegetable fats, and you eat more whole grains, fruits, and vegetables.
One theory suggests how a diet high in fat could contribute to certain cancers. Eating more fat appears to create higher levels of the female hormone estrogen in the bloodstream.
We can watch that a little later. All right. I want to give Jim all of his time, so let's pray. Father in heaven, thank you, Lord, for this information. It's not a burden, it's a blessing. And I pray that each person that has heard this, you know, will have an open heart and an open mind to be able to understand and to follow more clearly your original plan and design for us. Thank you for this information. Thank you for what it can do. to keep us healthy, happy, and holy for heaven. In Jesus' name, amen.